Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This week, my guest is Sarah Hine, co-founder and CEO of March Biosciences, a cancer-fighting cell therapy company that recently closed a $28.4 million Series A round and is getting ready to launch its Phase 2 trial. Sarah joins me today to discuss the past 2.5 years of growing March and the role Houston and its biotech ecosystem has played within the company's growth. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's an exciting time for March, and so I'm really excited to dive into everything you're doing now. Before we even get there, let's talk a little bit about your background and how you got into this world of cell therapy innovation.
Yeah. So my background originally is as a PhD scientist. Like many people here in Houston, getting my PhD training, in this case at Baylor College of Medicine, is what brought me here. At that point, I realized I loved science, and I actually fell in love with startups as the most translational form of science, which is, you know, how do you take the work that you're doing in the lab and get it to more patients? And what is the process that, you know, builds belief and support and drives that innovation forward? Through getting plugged into the local ecosystem, originally through InVenture, I found my way to working with Dan Watkins at Mercury Fund and helping launch a startup called Courier Therapeutics. Definitely as the most junior person, but I was able to interact and see all the different components of an early stage startup. And that was, you know, from figuring out the right experimental plans to generate data, to create proof points, to even budgeting and talking to VCs and all the little bits in between. And that really instilled an appreciation for how can you build belief in a story and strategically de-risk in between those big inflection points that we always think about. So in pharmaceutical development, it's, you know, can you get to a trial and where's your first patient data? But there's a lot of little steps to even get the resources and belief to get to those opportunities. Eventually, we sold that company and I went over to Texas Medical Center Innovation to help launch an accelerator for cancer therapeutics with a personal mandate, really, of trying to build a resource that I wish I had, right? And one of the big opportunities in Houston is I think we have some of the best science in the world. We have the largest medical center in the world, but we don't always have the same connectivity and baseline knowledge and experience in the ecosystem to drive these projects forward. So bringing those resources together with the innovators is what was really sort of the goal of that accelerator. And then through that accelerator, I met Max Momokin, our CSO, and then later Malcolm Brenner, and saw a early version of the clinical data behind our lead asset that became MB-105 when we spun out March Biosciences. And so that, in a nutshell, is sort of the longer path, but it's been a really exciting time to build a company, I would say, here in Houston.
It's amazing. Well, I think everything that's happening at TMC, there's a lot happening at TMC, but I wonder if you could talk a little bit more specifically about the accelerator for cancer therapeutics, because we've talked about it on Innovation Map. We've had stories about spin-out companies, such a great program. But can you tell me a little bit about, for the benefit of our listeners, how it works and what exactly you're doing, what's done at ACT?
Yeah. So ACT, first of all, was incepted by the TMC in partnership with Suzanne Tomlinson and Stan Watowicz, who are really the original champions of the program, and put together this idea and plan that they took to CPRIT, and CPRIT very fortunately decided to help fund to help drive, like I said, that early commercialization process. When you go to start a company or start a startup, a lot of times you have science, and the scientific founders are typically the best at what they do. They have those unique insights. That's how they're able to be successful in a research hub like this. But what they don't necessarily have is that larger context of all of the components of drug development, and then also the connectivity to drug developers who know both how to form a company, run a company, find additional experts and subject matter experts to manage manufacturing and early toxicity studies and clinical design and put all those pieces together. And so that becomes a very difficult barrier to overcome. And even the academic founders who have been successful in the past, a lot of times it happens at arm's length because maybe the technology has been licensed, but they don't always have a good view. And so the repeatability of that process can be very challenging for even people who have done this multiple times. One of our goals through the accelerator then was to both take these specific projects, what we felt like were potentially high impact projects, and work with them to go through that process of vetting and you know, diligence and, you know, self-diligence and putting together the story and helping craft a larger vision for that, and then connect them to people who can help carry the programs forward. It could be with the entrepreneurs in residence at the accelerator. It could be with outside partners. I always considered all of those a win because we have so much more innovation here in the medical center than we have a capability of driving all of the projects forward. And so it was a really exciting time. We've had a number of truly excellent programs come through. The EIR that followed after me, Michael Torres, is starting a new company, Crossbridge Bio, with some excellent investigators out of UT Health. And then, you know, Tinashe is starting another company with some investigators over at MD Anderson on CD5L. So it's an exciting time, and you're starting to see that flywheel repeat as more and more projects get spun out, find the right home, and then find the capital to help them drive forward.
It's such an interesting part of the TMC, and I feel like one that not a lot of people know about just because it is so niche and really tackling some really big challenges. So I appreciate you peeling back the curtain a little bit on that. And I think it sounds like as entrepreneur in residence and for that program, you really had a front row seat to see some really cool, promising therapeutics. So what about the technology from March stood out to you as being something you wanted to get your hands on really specifically?
It's multifactorial. The one thing you can't change easily in a biotech company is the foundational science, right? It's a science-driven business. And when I first started talking to Max and understanding what this therapy was, they already had it in the clinical trial with T-cell lymphoma and T-cell leukemia patients. And we're seeing clinical results in a truly difficult indication. And then I also saw sort of an early stage investigator who had a unique awareness and sophistication really about driving impact through these early projects and openness and hunger to create the best products. And so for me, that was a very compelling opportunity to partner with somebody that I thought was quite brilliant to help drive this project forward. And then on top of that, you know, you take a look around and Houston has actually a unique, I would say, sophistication in cell therapy. It's where we have had biotech spin out. Cell therapy has been one of our more successful verticals. And so we had resources and knowledge here that were uniquely available for this drug category. For example, the CTMC, which was the spin out from MD Anderson and partnership with National Resilience, allowed us, even as a very new, very small startup, to move very quickly into additional technological development and get ready for the next stage of trial at a level of sophistication that I think is unusual for a company of our maturity otherwise. And so when all of those sort of factors come together, that's when you start looking at it and you say, okay, I think we can do something here, and you get really excited to pull together and then go tell that story to other people.
I think before we move on, I wonder if you can give us like a very broad description of the type of treatment March has, and specifically what you're currently targeting and the need for this type. I know we were talking earlier about, cancer therapeutics. It's a thing we need. Everyone can agree, but why specifically the illnesses you're targeting?
Yeah. So as you said, I never have to explain to people why we would go out and try to fight cancer. I think that's a sort of self-evident sort of hypothesis. But what I personally find is exciting in cancer therapies in general are these what are called immune therapies, where you're using the body's own immune system to seek out and destroy the cancer cells. And what's really exciting about that, these are the same immune cells that fight cancer or pre-cancers for most of your life. And then usually what happens is the cancers figure out a way to mask themselves. And so with modern approaches, we can boost the immune system. MARCH is based on a kind of drug that is called a CAR T cell therapy. What that means is we take the immune cells from the patients and we engineer them with a very specific targeting mechanism and some stimulation signals that allows them, when we put them back into the patient, to seek out and destroy the tumors. And what's really exciting about these living cell therapies is they expand in the patient. And then even from a single dose, you have an opportunity to see a complete remission and sometimes essentially curative remission response for some of these patients. The early generations of CAR T cell therapies that have been approved have primarily directed towards what's called B cell derived lymphomas and leukemias. There's a sister sort of disease called T cell derived lymphomas and leukemias. And unfortunately, the existing cellular therapies cannot function against these T cell derived diseases. And moreover, broadly speaking, there's actually just very, very few therapies for these patients at all. And so, unfortunately, when patients become relapsed or refractory to standard of care, there's a handful of salvage therapies available, but you're really just typically buying a few months at a time. The response rates are very poor. And unfortunately, the prognosis drops to about 10 to 20% survival over 3 years. And so we had patients in these early data in that phase one study where you saw some of these patients achieve a longer-term remission. There's a couple patients now 5 years out from their initial treatment who are still alive today and cancer-free. And so that's really exciting for us to see results. And it's been exciting to the clinicians that we've spoken to who are now engaging with us as we get ready for this phase two trial, because there just hasn't been opportunities for patients quite like this in the past.
How nuanced is cancer, the different types of cancer? Is what you're working on something that can be applied to a broad range of cancers? Or I know you're focused on some right now in particular with the trials, but what's the big picture goal?
So targeted therapies are targeted. So our target is expressed on these T cell cancers. There's a couple other cancers like mantle cell lymphoma and chronic lymphocytic leukemia that do express our target. But unfortunately, I've come to believe, I don't think there's ever going to be a magic bullet where you can sort of hit a huge, swath of these cancers. We're going to continue to chip away at these diseases by creating really elegantly engineered therapies against these different kinds of tumors. Now, that said, MARCH in general is committed to this idea that we're going to continue to work on difficult tumors and sort of different targets or uniquely engineered targeting strategies against these additional sort of diseases. And as we expand into the next year, you'll start to see us speak about that a little bit more, where we're not going to just focus on this sort of initial indication, but continue to work on new diseases out in the space that haven't been addressed previously by other strategies.
I think that you have a story about the name, where the name came from. Do you want to share that?
Yeah, the name. So when we launched the Accelerator for Cancer Therapeutics, I started at TMC and was given this mandate to launch an accelerator. And then a month later, went home and worked from home and launched this virtually due to COVID. So that was a really interesting experience. And so you're trying to do this thing, which is start a company and, you know, understand and build a relationship with somebody, work through difficult and complex challenges, you know, completely virtually. And frankly, that's just difficult to do. So as the weather started to warm up, March, as you know, is spring here in Houston. It's not everywhere in the country, but in Houston, I actually think it's one of the best months of the year. And that's when we were really able to start to get together and connect and build this plan of how are we going to start this company? And what would that look like? And what are our strategies going to be? And came together and you know, agreed to start the company that became March Biosciences. Now, what's great about it is it's also, I think, prescient in that it's, you know, very progressive. Like we're not running. We're not just trying to sort of create a big burst and then to very little effect. We're going to continue pushing forward towards that sort of inevitable outcome of creating this real patient impact at the end of the day.
It's a great name, and I love that it has that double meaning. And I think, and we're going to talk about this, and actually you've already talked about it a little bit. We're going to talk about it a little bit more about the opportunities in Houston that have really set up March for success. So I love that it kind of has like a subtle Houston nod to it. Is yes, you're right. March is one of the best months in Houston for sure. So we've talked about the founding and kind of your background. What have the past, so it's been about 2 years now that you've been working on March, but what have those 2 years been, what have you been able to accomplish and kind of bring us up to what the recent news is, which is the funding, which we'll talk about next.
Yeah, so we have been moving, I would say, pretty quickly. We are building off of that initial clinical study, but in that time, we've had to transfer the manufacturing process from the original academic manufacturer, which was Baylor College of Medicine, to the CTMC. And then in these cell therapies, they are, as I mentioned, sort of these complex living therapies. And so refining that manufacturing process, streamlining a little bit, getting it ready for a phase two trial, trying to make it so it can be a scalable process that is highly repeatable is a really key step function for these advanced therapies. And so that's been a lot of the work. Working with CTMC has allowed us to move really quickly. We ourselves were able to also get an investment commitment from the Cancer Focus Fund, which is tied to MD Anderson and is allowing us to partner with Anderson as our flagship site for this phase two trial. And then, you know, additionally, we were able to get a CPRIT award, which anybody who's been through that process understands, you know, is an incredibly rigorous process, but it's a great program from the state of Texas where you can achieve these large, pretty substantive grants to drive impact specifically in cancer. And so fortunately, the reviewers and the product development committee agreed with us that this was a high impact project and awarded us those funds as well. And so those funds and those, you know, that progress in conjunction with this recent close of our Series A, we now have the resources required to push into this phase two trial. We're actively going through that process now. We expect it to launch early next year. And then we're going to be able to go treat additional patients really with a focus on T-cell lymphoma. And so it's an exciting time. We've been working for 2 years now, 2.5 years really, and are getting back into the clinic and getting to treat patients again. So I'm really excited to see what happens in the next few months.
That's amazing. Well, congratulations. Let's talk about the raise and oversubscribed Series A at $28.4 million. Which is just a massive Series A. So congratulations on achieving that. I know it's probably very on par for what is needed for the type of work you're doing, but tell me a little bit about the process of fundraising for a therapeutics company.
It's the amount of money that's needed. I mean, you know, we're sitting at $51 million total into the company, including both this recent raise and the prior sort of non-dilutive and dilutive funds both. But I've already been invested into this company. We're really excited by the partners that we have. So we were able to, you know, have our lead investors be Mission BioCapital, which is a specialist in biotech companies, particularly these sort of early stage companies that are building with large ambitions and for biocapital, which really specializes in advanced therapeutics. And so the fact that people who look at this every day and have seen sort of the entire landscape were excited to lead our round was tremendously helpful. And that helped catalyze the rest of the round to come together around this program. What those funds are going to be able to do. So, you know, biotech is a little bit more expensive than other, you know, verticals that you can build and as a startup. And so that's going to allow us to both push through the 2A readout for our phase two trial and really provide that validation that this therapy is continuing to work in a company sponsored setting, a large, you know, multi-site trial across the country, as well as continue to build our pipeline and think about where are the next challenges for patients where we can create outsized impact. So it's an exciting time.
Now, what is something about that process that you feel like the general entrepreneurial community might not know about when it comes to specifically therapeutics? Did anything surprise you in the process?
I don't know if surprise is the right word, because I think I already had some appreciation of this based on my prior experiences. But it is always a process, even if you know this and have had to do it before, which is the science for biotech. This, as I said before, the science is essential. You have to have great science. You have to have a deep understanding of what it is that's going to work here, where perhaps there's been some failures before. But as important, and I think sometimes, particularly those of us, and myself included, right, with a scientific background, don't always fully appreciate is that's not enough to carry you all the way through. And so, you know, in addition to the big milestones that I can point to, right, on our technical development and regulatory work, right, the reason we've been able to be successful is we put together a team of people who knew how to navigate those processes. And that is as important. When you go talk to venture, it's as important as I would say the science is sort of demonstrating that you have the right plan and the right people to execute on it, because you can spend a lot of effort and a lot of capital going in the wrong direction if you don't have those pieces in place. And so that helps you, that helps build that confidence that this is going to go well moving forward.
Well, and that kind of brings me back to the how unique it was to develop MARCH in Houston with the landscape of the TMC plus CTMC being there and all the opportunity that had. Was Houston really providing the right people, the right expertise? Do you feel like that made a difference in developing MARCH?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've been able to move forward in sort of a, I don't think this is, you know, a surprise to anybody. It's been a difficult funding environment for venture across the board, I would say, and biotech in particular was hit in the post-COVID times. And we've nonetheless been able to move, I would say, on a quite aggressive timeline and get significant capital. And that's, you know, partly due to the partnerships and resources we've been able to find and engage here in Houston. And so having, you know, the TMC there as a space and as a home for us to initially incubate and then use that as a launch pad for these additional partnerships and resources with CTMC, with CPRIT, with the Cancer Focus Fund, helped us, you know, put together a much more compelling package. And then we're continuing to build the team here in Houston. I'm sitting currently at, you know, Portal Innovations over at the new Helix Park facility. It's a beautiful space. I highly recommend everybody take a look at, go by and take a look if they get an opportunity. And that's, you know, where we'll continue to grow the company here in Houston. So I've never had a complaint with, you know, the ability to find really great people and great partners here in Houston. It's been a tremendous opportunity, I would say.
I think it's a no-brainer. Like, I'm a native Houstonian, and I've obviously covered Houston innovation for 6 years, so I'm very tuned in, and it makes so much sense that we're able to incubate and start really successful biotech companies with TMC and with all the different communities that are around healthcare and life sciences. But at the end of the day, Houston still is not considered a biotech hub, or maybe it's like considered an up and coming one when you compare it to the coast. Do you feel like we're done up and coming, or we still have some up and coming to do? And if you do, where do you feel like there are still some holes and that we can fill to make this the biotech hub, right?
Yeah, I think we're definitely still up and coming, and it's okay and even exciting, I think, to frame it that way. I have seen Houston go from very, very little activity to now we have this, like I said, this new hub here at Helix Park with a number of emerging biotech companies, and you're seeing that flywheel start. But we need to continue to follow those stories and continue to build that ecosystem. I'm a huge believer in the power of connectivity and these power of these hubs where you can be shoulder to shoulder and having coffee with other people working on interesting things and compare notes or have those happy coincidences that allow you to figure out a problem that maybe you've been trying to understand, and they know, they're like, oh, you should talk to my friend, and they actually have helped solve this exact problem. And that's powerful and difficult to replicate without these ecosystem hubs. Houston also, you know, we have a lot of capital, but not a lot of capital that is comfortable investing in things like biotech. Historically, we have done a lot of, you know, SaaS software and digital health even and medical devices, and then of course obviously the energy sector lends itself towards, you know, energy type investments and engineering type investments. But the biotech, despite having the largest medical center in the world, is a little bit disconnected, I would say, from that larger flywheel of capital. And so, you know, recognizing that, that's where continuing to build that connectivity to these outside hubs and outside partnerships, I think behooves us. And really, it's an incredibly small world anyway, right? Even if you are in Boston, a lot of Boston teams hire people in San Francisco, right? Or San Diego. So, you know, there's no right place to build a company. It's about figuring out how do you engage with the best people wherever they are and bring your story to them and drive that visibility and, you know, identity around the mission that you have so you can move forward.
It's such a great point too, that, you know, especially post-COVID era of how remote we can be and still work together, but at the same time, the opportunities being in a hub with all the activity is a great asset as well. So it's a great perspective. So we've talked about starting March and then raising Series A. You've mentioned the phase two trials and that being something coming up next. What else is next? What else are you focused on? What do these next couple of years look like?
Well, right now, what's next is our focus, and that is our main focus is getting this trial going. We're in the middle of launching it. I think it's going to be an incredibly exciting year as we see this patient data come in. It's certainly something that the team has been working towards very hard over the last few years, and so that'll be a gratifying experience. That said, you know, that's, you know, one indication. Beyond that, you know, we're going to be looking at other opportunities. As I said, there are other diseases that do express our target. We'll be looking at those expansion opportunities. And then we're going to continue to build our pipeline and build our team to be able to, like I said, achieve additional impact, you know, in other indications as well. There's some really interesting trends, I would say, in cell therapy in general. And so without going into too much detail, what I will say is, you know, you're seeing a lot of activity in, I would say, two key spaces right now in these cell therapies. You're seeing it in autoimmune diseases, and you're seeing it in solid tumors. And all of those are on the table for, you know, additional growth opportunities.
The world is your oyster.
The world is your oyster. You just have to figure out how to do it differently than everybody else has done it before. It's easy.
Yeah, that sounds so easy. It's just a little to-do list marker. I guess, like, looking back and this is might put you on the spot a little bit, but looking back at the past 2.5 years, we can even include starting up ACT and your work at TMC. But what's been the hardest part for you that some, you know, people might not know about? What's been the biggest challenge and how have you kind of navigated it?
So I think what's really interesting about starting a company that I think people just don't, I don't think anybody can appreciate it until you live the experience, is you're constantly trying to calibrate between the entrepreneur's belief that you see something that everybody else doesn't see, and a little bit of a sanity check to ensure that you just aren't seeing things. And it's mentally very difficult. And I don't know any entrepreneur that hasn't struggled with that at different moments. So what tends to carry you through is you have to have that internal conviction to push you forward. I would hazard that this is probably why there's a pretty heavy Venn diagram overlap between people who like to do things like startup companies and people who like to do sports like marathons and triathlons and those kinds of things, is it does require a sense of purpose, I would say, across both, and a fortitude to push through. So I don't know if that's, you know, surprising to anybody. I think intellectually, I think a lot of people know that, but I do think, you know, in between the press releases, you know, you do have to have people you trust and a team that you can rely on to work together to self-calibrate and ensure that you're going after this mission and you're doing the best job that you can.
Yeah, I do. I want to know that Venn diagram now, because I do feel like there are a lot of
very high. Also, long distance bike rides, you know, century bike rides, you know, it's a very heavy overlap based on my non-scientific survey.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like you have to have that dual conviction of being very, very ambitious, but also knowing and being able to do it, knowing that you're able to do it yourself, because that's like you need both ingredients, and they sound like diametrically opposed, but they are, like, to dream big and also be able to do it, you know?
I agree with you, but I want to sort of modify it slightly in that the important thing is you can't do it yourself, actually, and you shouldn't try to do it yourself, because if you do, you're not going to have that additional perspective. None of us know all the hurdles that we're going to have to go over, and you can't figure it out on your own either. And you just, you know, I think that's a little bit of a the entrepreneur's myth, right? But what you have to do is you're always sort of course correcting. And that's why I said it's really important to have a team and partners that you rely on, that you trust to work with you to, you know, achieve that original mission, but you're always kind of, you're flowing like water around the different rocks and barriers that might be in front of you to get to that ultimate goal. And it's never 100% clear what all the rocks under the water are going to be when you start.
Yeah, exactly. But also that like conviction that, like, the never give up mentality, right? Because there's a lot of challenges, especially I imagine in a self-therapy startup, like so many challenges that will push you down, but it's like the get back up and jump those hurdles is probably endless.
Yeah, you just have to believe in what you're doing. You can't, I always say startups are too hard to do just because you think it's going to be, you know, fun or just because it's exciting. Like, you have to have a core conviction around your mission and that you're doing something, you know, unique and worthwhile with your time.
Yeah, I think that's a great message to end on. So thank you for that, Sarah. It's been so exciting to hear all about March Biosciences and what you're doing, and great to chat. So keep us updated, because I know there's even more big things coming, and good luck on the phase 2 trial.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.